Welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Hume, and I'm here to take you through the very latest news and views, hints, tips, and tricks to help you on your property journey. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. It's June the 29th as I record this, and wow, what a lot has happened. We've had interest rates go up by 0.5%, which was a bit of a shock. We all knew interest rates were going to go up, and the widely anticipated move was 0.25. But you'll know from our last broadcast, we did say that it could possibly be up to 0.5%, and we've seen that happen. And the impact has been, well, people are stunned, to be frank. And people that were considering selling their houses, many of those people have decided that they might put their plans on hold and maybe look at things when interest rates settle down. And when that will be, who knows? We're certainly looking at tough times for the rest of the year for people, whether you have a mortgage, whether you're a tenant or a landlord, tough times ahead. Why? Well, because it impacts everybody. The only people not to be impacted by this change is, of course, anyone who has savings, or not in a negative way anyway, anyone who has savings should see an increase in their rate of return. Apart from that, we're all stuck with problems unless you've got a fixed rate mortgage and you've been wise enough to fix for a number of years. So as far as the market's concerned, what's going on? Well, a couple of things. First of all, let's talk about sales. The old 3Ds, I'm afraid, are the people that are selling right now. That's death, debt, and divorce. And people's circumstances will always be something that causes them to sell up. For instance, we've had a few situations where people are going into nursing homes and therefore have needed to sell or rent their property. And the relatives now are quite often looking at both options and saying, well, should we sell it? Should we rent it? Most of the time it results in the sale option being used. But now and again, where prices have been pushed a little bit, people are deciding to rent rather than sell. This often involves a bit of a maintenance problem as well, in that the houses often need upgrading to make sure that they're suitable legally for renting on the assured short hold tenancies that we usually use. But as far as the rental market's concerned, yeah, it's a real problem out there for both landlords and tenants. Landlords have the problem that their mortgages have either gone up already significantly, or they're going to go up at the point when the end of their current fixed rate is. And this is causing them a problem because quite often many of our landlords don't wish to increase rents for tenants. They're quite happy with their tenant and would comfortably sit with the rent if the margin between the rent and the outgoings were similar, because many landlords are sitting on their assets just for long-term capital growth. They're not worried about the rental income. We do have others that are concerned with income, and many of those have lost a significant portion of their income because of these increases in rates. What does that lead to? Well, it leads to two things. First of all, lots more rent increases going through. If you're a tenant and you've had a rent increase, you have my sympathy. It's terrible out there for that. Lots and lots of tenants are seeing double digit increases in their rent, as much as 10 or 20% or even more. But then many landlords, of course, have seen their rates go from as little as 1% to as much as 10%, the variable rates that are being quoted by buy-to-let lenders. And this is causing huge uplifts in the amount that landlords have to pay. The market is still very, very strong if you're a new landlord coming to market and you've already anticipated these numbers, then there are plenty of tenants out there looking. And of course, where landlords are trying to really skate the difference between where current rates are for rent and where they need to be, quite often what we find is that landlords are saying, well, okay, our mortgage has gone up by, 400. We can't push that onto the tenant. So let's try, 300. Some landlords are going the other way and saying, well, I need to get it all back or I'm selling. And some landlords are actually selling. So no doubt, longer term, this leads to bigger problems for the housing market. And most importantly, it leads for bigger problems at the lower end of the market. And this leads to homelessness. And there are now over 1,700 more people sleeping rough in London. And I think that's a terrible, terrible blight on our society. I really do feel for people that are homeless. And I think that people sleeping rough on the streets, we should do more to assist. And although the Big Issue does wonderful work, and 100% we're behind what they do, many of the other groups seem to think that it has to be a competition between landlords and their particular championing of tenants, where we should all be working together, in my view, to try and do the very best for those people that are struggling to obtain accommodation. But here's an article in the Daily Mail and the Guardian. It says that over 1,700 more people are sleeping rough in London. And this is data compared to last year. So it's a direct comparison by the Greater London Authority. It shows a 21% rise in rough sleeping, with 10,053 people sleeping rough in 22-23. Compared with 8,329 in 21-22. It's been attributed to the cost of living crisis and the winding down of COVID-19 emergency provisions. Westminster saw the biggest rise in rough sleeping, with a number of people sleeping rough for the first time, up 26%, over a quarter on last year. The GLA figures do not include hidden homeless people, of which there are many. Sadiq Khan has called for rent controls. Well, wouldn't he? He always does. We'll come on to why that might not be as wise an idea as you might think. Bank of England had to make a strong move. This is an article that's in The Independent, Reuters, The Evening Standard, The Daily Mail. Governor Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, says the rate move was because he had to make a strong move on rates after inflation fell less than expected. The bank last week increased rates from 4.5% to 5% after the Office for National Statistics revealed that inflation had only fallen by 8.7% in May. Mr. Bailey told a European Central Bank event that inflation and the labour market data showed clear signs of persistence and caused the bank to conclude that it had to make really quite a strong move at that point, adding it was justified. Mr. Bailey argued that half point rate hike was preferable to two consecutive quarter point increases. He also said, "I'm very clear that our job is to return inflation to target and we'll do what is necessary." Well, I think it's true, it's his job to return inflation to target. But I think the problem with the interest rate rises is that they really do lag, because obviously people on fixed rate mortgages aren't impacted. Fixed rate loans to businesses aren't impacted straight away. And the wider economy, it takes a while for these things to filter through. And I think they started to raise interest rates too late. And now, as usual, panica, panica, they've gone over the top and they're going over the top with these. I suspect that we'll be in a position where we'll be correcting rates. The question is when we get there. The long-term average is around 4.5%. We're now at 5% already. I suspect that those rates will be coming down as the economy struggles, probably by the middle of next year. But that's just the best guess. You know, there's no guarantee that that will happen, and certainly not financial advice. Now, what's it doing to sellers? Well, it's forcing sellers to accept lower offers, says an article by Zoopla. Now, they say an increasing number of property sellers are having to accept lower offers on their homes because of higher mortgage rates and the cost of living crisis. Research by Zoopla shows 42% of sellers are agreeing to discounts of 5% or more on asking prices. That's the highest level for 5 years, while 15% of those trying to sell their homes were accepting discounts of more than 10% on the initial asking price. Mortgage rates have continued to climb after the Bank of England raised rates, they said. Zoopla said the higher rates would result in a 10 to 20% hit on buying power. The summer buyer can afford to borrow to purchase a property compared with when they were at 4%. Well, on that, what I would say is that many asking prices don't bear any correlation to real world values. And what I mean by that is, as I've said many times here on the show, many agents will overvalue. Why do they overvalue things? What's the point of an agent overvaluing is a question people often ask me. Well, the point is this: if you give a higher valuation than another agent, you may well obtain the instructions to sell that property. Many of the agents that give overvaluations know this. And so it becomes a race to the top. In other words, agent A is going to say, let's give you some round figure examples. Let's say a house is worth £500,000. Agent A knows that if he goes in at the true value, then he will lose out to other agents that will be quoting 10% over. Agent B goes in at 10% over. And agent C, knowing that agent B always goes in 10% over, goes 20% over. And so you have a race to the highest figure in order to gain the instructions of the vendor or selling client. Now, you may think, well, that's dishonest. Well, agency is a dirty business, I'm afraid. Certainly, we at James Alexander, the company which I represent, try our best to be honest and accurate, and that often involves in us losing instructions. Just this week, I was called back to a house which we originally valued at $600,000 6 months ago. It's been on the market with a competitor agency on at, can you believe, $750,000, and then $725,000, and then you guessed it, $700,000, then $675,000, currently six at $650,000, and is not achieving any interest and is probably now worth less than the 600 that I originally valued it at. But it just goes to show that it's done them no favors by actually quoting a higher asking price. In fact, what they've done is they've missed the best of the market and it's cost them money. They've been misled by their current agent. But here's the other problem. They've been signed up for a very long period of time. And until that contract expires, they have no choice but to stick with the agent that misled them. And this is why agents do it, because once they've got you on these very long contracts, you're trapped, which is why when someone gives you a high valuation on your property, your next question should always be, how long is your contract? I don't think any more than 8 weeks is necessary to sell any house that is realistically priced. So if your agent is asking for 12 to 20 weeks, then you should ask yourself why that might be if they've valued your property at a price at which it's saleable. But that's a real problem at the moment. So then what happens, if you can imagine that house that was on at 750 coming down to 650 has had a huge percentage decrease. But a percentage decrease from what? From an unreasonable figure in the first place. So these dramatic headlines about huge price falls are not necessarily what they seem. Yes, prices have fallen off a bit, around 5% so far, and we suspect that it will hold at that level. Why will it hold at that level? Because there's not much supply. There are hardly any new houses coming to market. And for that reason, prices will hold fairly firmly. And yes, people that aren't getting traction, buyers are seeking out value. And if they can find something that compares better with the one that you're offering, then I'm afraid they're going to go for that. So you need to be very price competitive, but you don't need to give your house away. There is still a market there. You just need proper advice, really. That's the most important thing. So that's on the higher mortgage rates. Now, apart from that, we have the National Residential Landlords Association, and they've expressed relief on the latest news from Labour, which it appears to be that it's backing away from rent controls. Now, you may think on the face of it that rent controls are a good idea, but here's why they're not. This is what Beadle says anyway. Ben Beadle is the head of the National Residential Landlords Association. If you're a landlord and you're not a member, you should be. It's a good organisation. We're certainly members of it. He says, we agree with Labour that rent controls will do nothing to address the rental supply crisis that tenants across the country now face. What renters need is a proper plan to boost the supply of homes for private rent alongside all other tenures. Housing benefit rates should also be unfrozen without delay to support vulnerable tenants who are struggling to access the rental market. Now, this is another truth that actually people aren't talking about. People are looking to point fingers, particularly government, towards the landlord for the problem we have with the housing crisis, when in fact, while rents are going up across the country, the housing benefit rates that are being given to those that are at the bottom in terms of salary and needing housing benefit top-ups are that those benefit top-ups aren't enough to pay the current rental rates. So therefore, it's impossible for those people to access and unlock housing, because how do you do it if your housing benefit rates don't reach what a landlord can get on the private market? And remember, a landlord's not necessarily being greedy trying to get the current rate given the interest payments that they're making. What he also says is that Labour may be rejecting demands for rent controls made by Mayor Sadiq Khan and others. Speaking to the Chartered Institute of Housing Conference yesterday, the Shadow Housing Secretary Lisa Nandy said, as the mortgage crisis deepens for homeowners and renters alike, it is perhaps inevitable that the debate has turned again to short-term fixes. And when the house building is falling off a cliff and buy-to-let landlords are leaving the market, rent controls that cut rents for some will almost certainly leave others homeless. It might be politically easier to put a sticking plaster on our deep-seated problems, but if it is cowardice that got us here, it is never going to get us out. Well, I couldn't agree more with that, actually. Not that I'm a particular fan of any particular party, I must say. But rental freezes are a blunt instrument, and that's what they've found. And it's in Scotland, and it's been a real problem there. We know in Scotland that it's led to a reduction in properties available for rent, because people who have bought properties on a buy-to-let basis themselves face mortgages that have now gone up significantly and can't put their rents up in order to cover those costs. The Bank of England estimates it will take a 20% rise in private sector rents simply to cover the additional costs that buy-to-let landlords now incur. Even the Scottish scheme is not a rent freeze for everybody. It's a freeze for some people in circumstances. And in Wales, we believe there are other measures which are even more difficult and not really helping at all. Apart from that, coastal properties. Let's talk about something more happy, shall we? Coastal properties have soared for the first time, the average above £300,000. There's an article in The Express. It says the average property price in Great Britain is £240,000, but in coastal towns, it shoots up to above £300,000. Salcombe in Devon is the most expensive coastal real estate, with an average asking price of £1.24 million. Research by Building Society Halifax has revealed Sandbanks, well, we know that's posh, don't we? Harry Redknapp lives there. Of course he does. In Dorset and Aldeburgh in Suffolk are now followed closely behind, costing... Greenock in Scotland is the most affordable coastal hotspot, with a typical house costing just £97,500. Of course, the problem is it's a bit colder up there, isn't it? And two-thirds of the 170 coastal towns in Britain fall into the higher income deprivation category. Kim Kinnard, mortgages director at Halifax, said that most second home ownership undoubtedly plays a role in driving up prices in the most desirable locations, but there are also socio-economic factors at play. Well, that's true, because of course what happens is that you get holiday home purchasers move into these areas and they go there for the sunshine, and then out of the sunshine they leave and lock up their homes, and then the local economy suffers because of course the local shops don't get any trade in the winter because no one's there. So it can be a real frustration for locals. And of course, local people are priced out as well, which is really sad when you've grown up in an area and your family and you want to stay there. And all of a sudden you find that the prices are unaffordable. It can be a real issue, and it is a real issue. Now, there's another article in The Express that says more than 1.4 million households face mortgage repayment rises this year. MoneyHub's research found that a quarter, or just over 26% of homeowners surveyed with a mortgage, said that a further interest rate rise would mean they won't be able to afford their mortgage payments. In addition, a third, 35% of homeowners with a mortgage, that said that they were concerned that they will not be able to afford their mortgage when they remortgage due to rising rates. Well, it's the old argument as well. I think we've got to be very careful of what we call the rocket and the feather. It seems to me that building societies and banks are very quick to increase their variable rates on mortgages and very slow to increase their rate on savings. You know, it's what they call the rocket and the feather, where if the interest rate were to fall, you'd find that those rates would fall very slowly, or has done in the past. And I don't think this is fair. I think there needs to be more fairness and transparency. And what needs to happen more than anything is, I think, we need a limit on the gap between the Bank of England's base rate and the rate that building societies and banks can charge as a maximum. Because when you think about it, we've got variable rates as high as 10% when actual interest rates for the Bank of England are 5%. And that's a huge mismatch. And there's no doubt that there's profiteering going on in my mind. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. But certainly at the moment, it's tough times for a lot of people. And that's why we're going to see a lack of supply of properties coming to the market for both sale people moving to other areas. And the reason for this is that people can still sell their properties. That's really not as much of a problem as you might expect, because there's not as much supply as there usually would be. And there's always people that need to move for reasons of schooling, health, and family. So there are always a pocket of people that need to move. But the problem is, when you've only got death, debt, and divorce as a supply of that property, there's not a lot of supply coming through. And whether or not, the problem is it's kind of compounding as well, because when there's not a lot of supply coming through, the problem is people that might consider selling are also fearing that if they do sell their property and they look in the area they'd like to live, they're going to face the same problem that not many people are selling, and therefore not much property is coming up, and therefore they're less likely to find their dream home because the supply is not there. And that's what happens in a tighter market. It's very important in a tighter market that you choose your estate agent to sell your home, if you are deciding to sell, really carefully, because this is where the big corporates fail most clients. And we're finding time and time again now, we're getting called back to properties we've seen that are overvalued, and that the agents just aren't being proactive in trying to make sure that that particular client gets their house sold. And you know what most people want, and it's not unreasonable, is it? They want to be sure that they're getting the best price given the current market circumstances. People know there's no more magic wand out there, but by the same token, if an agent is proactive and doing their best on marketing, making sure that the three P's are correct, price, presentation, and promotion, you get those three things right and you will sell your home. And question now of whether you should sell right now comes down to whether you've got somewhere to go, if you're just selling to move to another area. And I know a lot of people, particularly buy-to-let landlords, are thinking, should we sell or should we stay? Well, that depends on your timing, in my view. If you're thinking, will the market improve within the next 6 months? I would suggest no, not in the next 6 months, it won't. If you said, will it improve in the next few years? I'd say absolutely it will. and things will turn around, and they'll turn around because interest rates will fall back down again to more normal levels. Having said this, I don't believe that the era of 0.5 and 1% home loans will be back anytime soon. So you know, you do have to be realistic about where this will land. And the long-term average is around 4%, 4.5%. And I do think interest rates will fall back, and they'll probably have to fall back below that because of the recession, I think, that will be plunged into by this, in my view, overreaction by the Bank of England in pushing rates quite as high as they have. Now, councils are warning that they need more staff to fund no-fault eviction bans. And this is the new Renters Reform Act, of course, which isn't yet in, but they're saying they're welcoming the changes, but would struggle to police them properly under the Renters Reform Bill, because landlords can only evict tenants in certain circumstances, including when they wish to sell the property or a close family member wants to move in. Breaching the new rules will carry a fine of up to £30,000, but every council I'm aware of, says this particular guy, had a shortage of EHOs, that's environmental health officers, and tenancy relations officers to investigate any potential offences relating to this. And I don't think they're going to get anyone any funding for that any more than landlords are going to get additional funding for the courts. Because if you remember, when the Renters Reform, well, if you don't, I'll explain, when the Renters Reform Act was brought about, they said that it would be fair for both landlords and tenants. And what they do is bringing all these rules, which would make a huge fundamental difference to tenants, they haven't. And then secondly, that they would improve the court system and streamline it so that landlords could obtain possession more quickly. We've heard and seen nothing of court reform. And this is exactly what we suspected from a government who seems to look for sound bites rather than true solutions. So there we are. That's my soapbox bit done for the week. In terms of the market and timing, well, this is an interesting one. When the market is a bit tougher, timing can be quite critical. The next busy time for the housing market, now we're in late June, we tend to find it quietens down a bit in July, August, because in our area where it's mostly family houses that sell, it's really a case of families going away on holiday, they're having their summer holidays off to Ibiza or wherever it may be, taking the children. And then when they're not there and they're back in the UK, they're visiting family, enjoying their children, enjoying the holidays while they can. And then we have the situation, what I call the mum's market, which I've spoken about a lot, where imagine you've got a young family, they're sat in their house, enjoying the sunshine, maybe a barbecue. And guess what it does in the UK? It rains. Why? Because it always rains, doesn't it? And then in come the children, in come the bicycles, because there's nowhere else to put them in the small place that they're living right now. And in come the children, and the bicycles and the children are now a lot bigger than they used to be. And suddenly mum, dad and the children feel very enclosed in a small space. And that's at the time when mum and dad look at each other quite often and say, we need to get out of here. We need to find a bigger place. And when that happens, they look to move on. And that's what we get in September. After that summer holiday issue, quite often we get what I call the mum's market. And I say the mum's market because in our area, we tend to find it's mum in the family unit that drives the search. Not exclusively so, but the vast majority. And therefore, second week in September, nearly always the phones start to light up and we start to get more inquiries. Will it be more muted this year? Yes, of course it will. We won't get the vast droves of people coming and inquiring about houses. But by the same token, will there be no one at all? Of course it won't. There'll always be people driven to move for reasons of schooling and for reasons of needing bigger accommodation for a growing family. So from that point of view, I would always reassure people that there is always a market. Many people will look at the sensational headlines that some newspapers are putting out saying that, you know, the market's going to fall off a cliff. It won't, because people always need that basic rudimentary thing, a roof over their head. And if they're not buying, they're renting. And the more people that don't buy flip over to the renting side, this puts more pressure onto the rental market, already undersupplied, which forces rents upwards. But we are getting to a point with rents now where people are looking to multi-share. So we've got a property on at the moment, which is in Clapham, and it's a four-bedroom house. But due to the rules in Lambeth, three or more sharers constitute what we call a house in multiple occupation, which involves lots more compliance with much more heavy regulation, meaning that there are often many thousands of pounds to be spent in order to even reach the threshold of the house in multiple occupation rules in that particular borough. And then on top of that, there's an annual license fee per room if you do that. So what it means is that multiple sharers, who are the ideal antidote to a more difficult market, are causing problems in that particular borough, which is Lambeth, by the way. And it means that we've got a real shortage of places available for multi-sharers. And they're the very people that are more likely to be able to afford the ever-increasing rents. And so then we rent it to a family, but hopefully the economy of that is that the landlords have to bring down the prices a little bit in order that the family can afford. That's certainly what we're finding in that particular borough. But also, we're finding that more people are looking to multi-share because, of course, with rents rising as they are and incomes nowhere near rising at the same pace, people are looking to make economies where they can. And often that economy is to bring in a sharer. And even for people with mortgages, lodgers are a typical solution to unaffordability. And we're finding more and more people are taking in lodgers, renting a room, which you can do under the rent a room scheme with tax breaks as well. So there's no reason why people shouldn't do that. But yeah, it's tough out there. It's going to be a tough year. There's no doubt about that. But if people tell you there's no market, then they're not experienced in the market. There's always a market. And certainly if you're thinking of selling or you just want to chat about it, then as always, give us a call or an email all about the podcast. Just drop me an email, ken@jamesalexander.com, ken@jamesalexander.com, or give us a call, 0208-679-8601. Thanks for listening as always. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast. We'll be back next week for another edition. Until then, enjoy the sunshine. Let's hope it doesn't rain. Ciao. Thank you so much for joining us on yet another edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. You can find out more at our website, jamesalexander.com. You can email me directly, ken@jamesalexander.com. We are estate agents and we can give you hints, tips, tricks and advice wherever you're buying, selling, moving to or from. Thanks to Ben Sounds for the intro and outro today, and thanks to Jack Bowles for production.